everyone, and welcome to episode 12 of season 11 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Shane Canto of Wasteland Reviewer. Welcome to the show, Shane.
Thank you so much, Rob, for having me. I'm looking forward to batting some Band of Brothers.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just, no one else can see this. I can see the library behind you of DVDs, and my assumption is that what I see is only the tip of the iceberg. Anyway, how many DVDs do you have?
To the side.
Okay.
I'm closing in on 2,100 movies that I own.
Wow, that's unbelievable. And have you seen all 2,100?
There's like one or two that I've gotten in like packs and stuff that I haven't gotten around to, but generally I don't buy things unless I've watched them first. So
that's fair.
So basically almost all of them I have watched before.
Okay. That's fine. I mean, coming from somebody who has a website with 13,000 movie reviews on it. So, you know, I'm assuming there will be movies that you probably have in your library that I haven't seen, but who knows? You know.
That's usually a good assumption for most people.
Well, I can see a few of the titles. It's a little blurry, but some of the ones that I can see, I'm like, because I'm not a horror fan, and I'm also not the biggest fan of foreign films. So the two that jump out at me that I see are one of each of those. So the odds are that you do have movies on there, but that's fine. That's one of the things I love about movie reviewing and discussing movies, that everyone has completely different opinions on them, because if we all have the same opinions, then it just would be really boring having these discussions. You'd be like, oh, well, I think this. Oh, that's a great idea. Oh, well, I think this. Whoa, I like that too. You need a little bit of debate and conversation about everything going on. So why don't we start off with the first simple question. What is your background with Band of Brothers?
So this was actually a nice excuse for me to watch it for the first time.
You're welcome.
I'll admit, thank you. I have gotten through the first couple episodes so far since I got asked to come on here, and or at least, you know, pal of mine connected me with you. So right now I'm working on chipping away through the series. I'm loving it for the so far, the first couple episodes. I've heard nothing but amazing things about it. I did watch a lot of war movies growing up because I grew up in the household with my grandfather who fought under Patton in World War II.
Oh, wow.
So he didn't like talking about the war, but he did like watching war movies. So like I'd watch The Great Escape and Patton and stuff like that with him. But never got around to watching this show. So I was looking forward to getting a chance to finally watch it. So.
Oh, wow. Were you able to ever get any nuggets from him about his experiences, or he just never opened up about it ever?
He never really opened up about it, especially when I was a kid. My mom wanted to take him to see Saving Private Ryan, and he didn't want to go see it because what he heard about how realistic it was and how visceral it was. So I think he was fine like watching old war movies where it didn't get like super graphic and intense in that kind of way, but generally he talked to me about Patton. That was basically it. So realistically the only thing he really talked about the war was talking about Patton himself.
Oh wow.
Which he liked him, so
okay. I mean, again, he's like Sobel. He's a great commander and leader. Sobel's problem is that he just couldn't lead on the field, you know. But as a training, as a training officer, Sobel was amazing. So a lot of people have things to say about Patton, but in the end, he got done what needed to be done.
And that was certainly my grandfather's perspective. So.
Okay. That works. it's nice to know, you know, from a firsthand experience that also works. Definitely makes sense. Okay, great. So I hope that that you enjoy the rest of the series. By the time that there is 6 months till I finish discussing it. So that's one of the reasons why I know that you asked to be on an earlier episode, which is perfect because this is I like suggesting movies, or in this case a miniseries, to somebody who's never gotten around to it, and finally they do, and they learn to appreciate it. So it's always nice to know that people take your recommendations and enjoy them. So
It's certainly something I do a lot, so I certainly appreciate that feeling.
okay, good, exactly. Yeah, I'm the same way. I mean, I because I've seen so many movies, it's rare for me to find blind spots, but every so often I find them, and I'm always pleasantly surprised when I do find something that someone tells me that I should take a look at that I'd never taken a look at, and like, wow, I can't believe after all the years I've been watching movies, I never came across something like that. Or on the from the same perspective, sometimes I'll rewatch something based on a review, a recommendation, and I'll get a much better appreciation of the movie, upon the rewatch. So
Absolutely.
I've had some of those that movies that I hated the first time, and then I rewatched it, and I'm like, wow, I can't believe I didn't notice that type of thing. So that works. All right, so episode 12 begins with Winters continuing to chide Buck, and ends with someone being very confused. So we ended things yesterday with both Winters and Buck in a Jeep having a discussion, and Winters continues this segment by saying, "Not some drafty who's going to get him killed." And then Buck turns to him and goes, "Are you ticked because they like me? Because I'm spending time to get to know my soldiers. I mean, come on, you've been with these guys for what, 2 years? I've been here for 6 days." So the truth is, I really like this conversation because it brings up the whole point of, should an officer be friendly with a non-com or just a regular soldier underneath him? Is that going to cause problems? Is that going to, the idea of a commander is that you're supposed to make decisions and send the best man to do it, and you're not supposed to have personal feelings about it, from that same perspective. I mean, you can even use the example from Saving Private Ryan, when they're taking the beachhead, and there you have Miller saying, okay, he's just throwing out names and telling people to go, and these are people that we never will know who they are, because most of them actually get killed. Or it's presumed that they're killed or shot or injured with what he's doing, but if he is overly friendly with any of them, he's gonna think twice and say, "Oh, well, I'm not gonna send Shane. I like Shane. Shane. Okay, I'm not gonna send him." So the fact that Winters is bringing this up is very interesting because, as anyone who knows any of the history of Band of Brothers, Winters was very close with all of his men, and he was close with them, but he still knew where to draw the line, at least at this stage in life. Obviously, later in the war and after the war, that obviously changed. He's able to become friendly with them, from a different perspective. But when you have to command men, you need to know what you're giving them. That type of thing. You need to know that you're doing what's best for the unit and for them and for the situation that you're in, not specifically for that person. So I like this little conversation between the two of them, and it also it's an introduction for us to Buck, because we'll see this throughout the rest of the series. I mean, you might have not gotten to that point, but Buck is someone who everyone is very friendly with, and that's one of the problems that he has later on, is that he is a little too close with some of them on a personal level. So I like the way they do that. And then Winters continues and goes, "You're gambling, Buck." He goes, "So what? Soldiers do that. I don't deserve a reprimand for it." He goes, "Well, what if you'd won?" He goes, "What? What if you'd won?" And I love the way that he says it, because Winters says it, "What if you'd won?" He pauses between each of the words to try and emphasize what he's trying to the point that he's trying to get across here. The point is that, think about what you're doing. It's not so clear cut.
Absolutely. This is an interesting point in pilot too, because so much of this first episode is boot camp and training. And now we're getting to the point where this is going to become real. And I think this is a really interesting conversation to introduce at this point, because it is going to become real. Lives are actually going to be on the line, moving forward. And, leadership is such an interesting thing, and it also really depends on context, because there's different types of leadership that you're going to have in different types of situations. You can get away with becoming closer with people if there's less stakes in a situation. This is literally life and death, and it's a matter of greater good in situations. And it's understandable where Winters is coming from, where you don't want to, in that moment, have any extra bias that's going to get in the way of you making tough decisions when it comes to strategically navigating a situation where people are going to die. And it's interesting because, like, Damian Lewis, I've seen him in a few things, but I know he's a very talented actor. And throughout this pilot, he is somebody who's a little bit more reserved. And I love Neil McDonough. He's a very charismatic actor, and you can just tell that he brings this charisma to Buck and that he has this connection with people. And it is a very interesting dynamic in this live conversation that they're having here. And there are consequences to building up these types of relationships. And I think, to reinforce what you were saying, that's what Winters is trying to reinforce. It's like really trying to drive fo home to Buck, like, hey, the things that you are doing, you have to really think about. Is this what you should be doing with the soldiers that are under you? So I think this is a really important conversation to really set the tone for what things are going to come after this.
I completely agree. I think it's great. And again, the way that the writers were able to succinctly tell these type of I guess warnings or these type of anecdotes within just an hour episode, as they're trying to get us to know who all these characters are. Just the this is I if I'm I'm pretty sure that this is pretty much the only scene that we really have with Buck in this particular part. Later on, we get more of him, but this is the introduction to him, and they're telling us, okay, he's gambling with the guys. That's the problem here. We need to work on this. We need to make some sort of we need to put a barrier between ourselves as officers and the men. And
Because
it's funny how Buck doesn't get that right away.
Because at some point he will literally be gambling with lives. If like that's the approach that you're taking with this, it's you are making gambles. When you are put in a situation where you're leading people, and if you're going to make decisions like that, and the unfortunate thing is you're literally gambling with lives when you are leading men into war. And this is an interesting conversation to plant in a pilot of a series that's going to be about war, because you're going to have these perspectives of like how both of these men lead their men throughout these situations. And I think this, along with so many other things in this first episode, which makes this such a great pilot to start off a series.
Right. I tend not to call it a pilot because it's not, anyone who's
Not
seen Pulp Fiction,
traditionally.
right? No, because anyone who's seen Pulp Fiction knows what a pilot is. A pilot is you make one episode to decide whether you want to continue it. This is just the first episode of a miniseries. So it wasn't that this show hinged on how well this first episode was taken by people. I mean, I can understand why you're referring to it, and that's fine. I look at the whole series of Band of Brothers as a whole, as opposed to, you know, that you have this one episode and okay, this is going to be great, and now we're going to move forward, because it's also you know, as I guess now miniseries are known as limited series. You know, it's the type of thing. Okay, we have 10 parts, and it's just because we want to tell a really long story. You know, it's not because we want to try to, you know, later on give us, you know, more tales of the Men of Easy Company or something like that. Which would have been great. No question about that.
The definition, like, television obviously has changed a lot, and the definitions of those things have changed, because now it's like, sure, you're going to make a mini series, but a limited series at least gives a little bit of context that, like, hey, if this works really well, we could always come back and, you know, make more and make more money.
Right.
Because there's certainly been some shows where I'm like, this was a mini series, should have stayed a mini series. And then they're like, well, come back to this. So obviously they made different decisions with this particular, like, jumping off points and telling different aspects of World War II, mm-hmm. with like the Pacific and like Masters of the Air more recently. But yeah, technically this is not a traditional, here's a pilot episode, see if this works. Yes, is to reframe that, this is a really effective first episode of a series that put some good plants in places.
Thank you for seeing my perspective on that.
Yep.
No, I mean, one of the things also is that you know, the with what you were saying about limited series, that okay, here we have one season of a limited series, and oh, now we have more ideas and we're going to try and continue it. Here the idea was, okay, we have this story to tell and we can't tell it in 2 hours, so let's tell it in 10 hours. You know, and that's what it is. We're not moving from that, which I think is more of the definition of what a miniseries is. You know, it's the because at least back then, you know, series were 24 to 26 or 28 episodes and stuff like that. So here we have a miniseries that's only 10 episodes. You know, but very realistic in the way that they were telling the story. And there's also the idea that a lot of times, at least in my perspective, on recent quote unquote miniseries or limited series, they pad it a lot in order to make it a little bit longer than it needs to be. In this one, it's the opposite. You feel that stuff needs to be truncated because there's so much they need to tell. You know, so that's the way I see that. So at this point, after Winters specifically says to him, what if you'd won, he looks at Buck and goes, never put yourself in a position where you can take from these men. And I love this line because it says so much about Dick Winters, you know, that he cares so much about these men that he's been with for 2 years, that there's nothing that you can do to take away from these men. These are exceptional men. This is a great group of soldiers. Don't ever make them feel as if you're taking something from them. You know, so I like that. And they just leave it at that also. We don't even have to have Buck agree or disagree or anything like that. It's as if Winter says, okay, don't let them think you're taking from them. And that's it. And then he just, you know, he stops the Jeep, gets out the Jeep, and goes into the main tent. The command tent. And you know, Winters walks into the command tent and goes, Lieutenant Meehan. And Meehan goes, enter. And then again, this is also nice to see the two of them working together, unlike what we've seen up until now between Winters and Sobel, that Meehan actually appreciates any advice that that Winters is giving him and respects him. And Sobel obviously didn't respect him at all. You know, and we'll see later that, you know, the confrontation that they have much later in the series with the saluting. I don't know if you've seen that point yet or not, but you know, Winter says to him, you salute the rank, not the man. Because Sobel, obviously, Winter's spoiler, Winter's actually rises higher in the ranks than Sobel did. And at a certain point, Sobel has to salute him, and he doesn't want to. And Winters reprimands him on that, and it's nice. We'll get there in a few
months. Especially from this first episode, it's very interesting looking at that dynamic. And it's funny coming from most people up to this point, you know, David Schwimmer from Friends.
Oh, for sure.
And seeing him like pop up in a series like this, and you know, his character is very antagonistic to the overall story of this, of Winters and this group of men preparing to go off to war. And I appreciated what Schwimmer brought to the role, because he does commit to this very, very narrow view of things, his very narrow view of things. And there creates that tension between him and Winters throughout that first episode.
Yeah.
And it's one of the most interesting and engaging pieces of this whole first episode setting things up.
Exactly. I mean, I think, again, I've talked about this before, you know, over the last 2 weeks of this season, but the irony of it all is that the Men of Easy probably would not have been so tight knit and so well trained if it wasn't for Sobel. That's the irony. Mm. They all hated him, but he was an amazing instructor. He just didn't know how to do it right. Or sorry, he did it right, but his some of his methods seemed a little I don't know if sadistic is the right word, but it was overreaching, you know, from that perspective. But it, most of the men, I mean, I'm assuming you haven't read the book Band of Brothers, but in the book it is mentioned that most of them have admitted, or I don't know if admitted is the right word, most of them have agreed with the fact that if it wasn't for Sobel, they wouldn't have bonded so well, because they bonded against Sobel.
Well, yeah, and a lot of times you find people bonding and forging a connection through adversity, and Sobel sure. was that adversity that they had throughout their training, and it forced them to come together and build that connection. And you know, not everybody has been in the military, but I think a lot of people have built connections with people because you relate to situations that you don't want to be in, or you're frustrated with, and you connect on a human level with other people going through that same situation. And I think that's a very human experience that they're able to portray really well throughout this first episode. And because this obviously goes through the training camp and going off to war and all these aspects, and in so many different films, television that focus on this, training like boot camp is always highlighted, and that consistency is like that tough as nails or frustrating drill sergeant, and people coming together through that adversity. And they tell that story so well in this first episode. Mm-hmm. And that gives that weight to this moment where we're transitioning out of that boot camp and getting ready. Winters is getting ready to, you know, go to war. And right. with everybody else, and leaving Sobel behind in that situation.
Correct. No, for sure. There's no question about that. And also, it's the idea that, I mean, the way that they, I mean, we'll talk about this over the next few days, the idea of we feel the anticipation that these men are all feeling. They're able mm-hmm. to make us feel it. And that's just amazing. But we're getting slightly ahead of ourselves with that one. But we'll see.
Yep.
So Meehan and Winters start talking, and Winters goes, "Well, on the last training jump, I had a compass." And then Meehan goes, "Close the flap." And then we see them in front of a map, and then Winters goes, "Then we turn left." He goes, "Yeah, bearing 042, 12 minutes. Then another left. Yes. Yeah. Call it 358 for 10 and a half minutes. Green light right over Ramsbury. Ramsbury every single time. And then I like how they show us that they're doing what they've learned in math. They take a compass, you know, they're able to mark the points and stuff like that. And he goes, well, linear distance of the grid of about, okay, Ramsbury, a pottery, and then they look at the map and they go, so it's Normandy. And yep. I love this little, you know, this takes like a minute or a minute and a half of this conversation. But what they're basically telling us here is that these two officers are smart enough to figure out what's going on. Nobody's telling anyone anything. Let's try and figure it out on ourselves. And, you know, the fact also that Winters was on the plane and was able to figure out, you know, when they're changing directions and all that stuff, and it's for this amount of time and stuff like that. You know, I don't know if he wrote it down at the time or he just has a great memory to figure that out. And that's just great that, you know, they're able to tell us. I mean, anyone who's watched this miniseries knows that on June 6th, 1944, you know, there was an attack on Normandy. These characters don't yet know that. So for them to reveal that information to us, that they're able to figure it out, is just great. I love it.
Well, and it's funny because I teach math and I teach like linear models and stuff like that. So I had this little appreciation of like watching this and them figuring out, applying that information to be able to actually plan things out and looking at that map in that way. But yeah, this is that moment where it's like, it's becoming real for these characters too, of like what's going to be coming. And it's one of those interesting things watching historical films and series and stuff like that. It's like most people know, like going into Band of Brothers, like, yeah, we know they're going to land in Normandy and go into the European theater and everything. And it was just like that moment of the soldiers kind of figuring that out for themselves is a little special moment in this first episode. It's like, yep, this is coming. We're getting there. This is becoming real.
Yeah, I definitely like the way that they do that, and especially because, you know, as you said, it's showing that these guys are smart enough to apply what they've learned in order to figure these things out. And I love it. You see, and now you can use that for your students. You can, you know, if a student go, what the hell am I going to need this for in real life? So, well, if you're in England getting ready to invade Normandy, you're going to be able to figure out where we're going to be invading. You know, you should use that clip in your class.
Well, and that's the thing. I do actually love showing clips of media using math. And this is a great one because it's like, it's literally just looking at a like set of axes where we're just like looking at points on a grid, but a map is just a grid with points that's on right. It and being able to piece all of that together. So I did appreciate that. And I am tempted to use this now when I'm teaching that material, being like, see, if you're trying to figure out stuff with a map, that's what you're doing. You're putting point here, point here, point there.
Wow. Wait, how old are your students? Like what age? Is this high school? Is this
college? So this most college. Of them are 18-year-olds. So
okay. So they'll appreciate. I mean, you don't have to show them all of Band of Brothers. You can just show them this 1.5 minutes.
Say, that would be quite a commitment of my class time.
Well, it would help you finish it also. So there you go.
Yeah, there you go.
I had a teacher in seventh grade that we sat and watched Centennial through the course of the entire year. Centennial, I believe, was a 12-part miniseries, and I think each part was 2 hours. Okay, so but again, it was
commitment.
History. We were learning about history, and the problem was that our teacher got into a car accident towards the end of the year, and we never got to finish it.
Oh no!
I did it on my own a few years ago, but yeah.
Not to go off on too much of a tangent, but I took Latin for 5 years from eighth grade to senior year of high school, and we watched all of I, Claudius, the BBC miniseries, every Friday in Latin 4 and Latin 5 because we're all like the same group of students with the same teacher. So, you know, having those types of moments, it's like, it's all about learning, it's context. So, but no, this is a great example. So all of you kids out there learning about linear functions, listening to this episode, maps, lines on maps, that's where you use it. So
there you go. You can find ways that will be more applicable in the future. Perfect.
There we go.
And then the scene changes, and we get to see Nixon, and Nixon is standing in front of a crowd of officers, and he's giving them a debriefing, and he says, Saint Marie Dumont, Causeway number one, Causeway number two, the ultimate field problem, the estuary of the Duve River divides two beachheads, codenamed Utah here and Omaha here. Seaborne infantry will hit these beaches in force at a date and time to be specified, H hour, D day. Airborne's objective, gentlemen, is to take the town of Carrington. And then he changes his accent and he goes, or Carrington, because he goes, Carrington, or Carrington, thus linking Utah and Omaha into a single continuous beachhead. And I love the way that they do this, because they're telling us something that we as people in the future already know. You know, we know about Utah Beach, we know about Omaha Beach, you know, especially anyone who's seen St. Bernard Ryan or The Longest Day or anything like that. You're familiar with all these things, but to actually see it on the map and see someone explaining it. And again, taking less than a minute, you know, this is maybe 40 seconds, 35, 40 seconds, just explaining this thing to us is great. And then I love the way that they transition into the next shot, where we get to see Meehan giving over the same information, which then tells us how this stuff works in the military. The idea is that, okay, you know, every group that the higher rank will brief the people below them and those below them and those below them, and, you know, in order to give over as much information as you can so that everyone knows what they're doing. And then, so Meehan then continues his briefing by saying, thus linking Omaha and Utah into one continuous beachhead. Each trooper will learn this operation by heart and know his and every other outfit's mission to the detail. So again, I like the way that he's explaining. Again, they're showing us the big difference between Meehan and Sobel. By the way, I don't think Sobel would have been able to give this type of briefing so efficiently as Meehan is doing it. And then one of the guys stands up and goes, Lieutenant Meehan, and he goes, yes, Dukeman. He goes, sir, are we dropping tonight? And he says to him, when it's time for you to know, we'll let you know. In the meantime, study these sand tables, maps, and reconnaissance photos until you can draw a map of the area by memory. Now, first of all, I love, once again, and I've mentioned this earlier, the way that Meehan knows his men. He hasn't been in charge very long. He already knows Dukeman's name. I mean, we talked, pretty sure it was last week, about the fact that, there was a point where Sobel says you, you, and you, as opposed to telling men's names. You know, showing that Meehan is a commander who knows his men's name. I mean, we had it with Sink also, you know, after they got their jump wings. You know, the Sink knew one of the characters, you know, one of the guy who brought him a beer, he knew his name. And that's great. Mm-hmm. That's what you need. Because you want people to feel as if there's meaning to them. They're not just, what's it, a cog in the... Exactly. Yep. You know that I know who you are, not just an ant. You're someone that, yep, that, you know, you are a person, and I know who you are. So I like that little touch of them showing that Meehan knows who Dukeman is, even though Dukeman sort of asks the silly question, you know, because of the fact that it was, you know, if Meehan would have given his briefing the same way that Nixon did, so then he will say, you know, it's going to be at a specified, H hour D day, you know, and that'll be it. That doesn't mean it's going to be today. It's going to be whenever it is.
Yeah. So. It's an interesting piece, because one side note, my full-time job, I run a tutoring center. And one of the first things that we train our tutors, it's like, make sure you use your students' names. Being able to make somebody feel comfortable and connected is identifying them and making sure that you know who they are. And that's just like little things about being able to build a connection and build trust with people. And also, I appreciated his response to this question because it's like, this is what's going to happen. There's information I can't tell you, but then I give you purpose.
Well, he
Your
doesn't know
job.
either. He doesn't know the answer.
Yeah.
We know that he
Yeah.
doesn't. Nobody knows the answer. Nobody on that level, even on Meehan's level, knows the answer.
Exactly. And it still gives them purpose of like, at this moment, your job is to make sure that you know that map up here in your head. Because, you know, he could just be like, well, I don't know. And that's not good leadership because then you're just reinforcing in that you don't know. You're leaving all your men in the dark, but it's giving them some kind of purpose and giving them, it's like, hey, you will know when you need to know, when it's important, when this is going to happen, and just be prepared. And to be the truth is, that was exactly what they needed to do because, you know, that kind of operation's like weather, trying to make sure you know you actually make it to the beach, with and make it to land flying in, all of those different aspects. So I appreciated that moment, how he handled that interaction.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a great answer. It's I don't really I'm not sure yet, but you have the time right now to make sure that you know this perfectly. You know, so I like that. I like the way that they do that. And then he continues and says, "Now we will drop behind this Atlantic wall 5 hours before the 14th Infantry lands on Utah, and between our assembly area and the battalion's objective, there's a German garrison right here in this area, Saint Marie du Mont. Easy company will destroy that garrison." So again,
Common.
they're telling us what Easy Company is going to be doing, even though
Yep.
you have to wait until the next part to actually see what is going to happen and whether that is what they're going to be doing or not. Because I think it's only in part three that they actually make it to Carrington. So it's they're sort of giving us, little hints as to what we're going to be watching in the future. I like when movies do that, when they explain things to us beforehand and we don't necessarily know that it's being explained to us, and then later on when you look back, you can say, oh, they were connecting the dots already beforehand. The perfect example that I always bring up, and I'm sure that most of the listeners have heard this already in the past, but you're going to hear it again, is Titanic. The fact that they show us the computer model of what happened right at the beginning, and then later, and they explain it. You have Mr. Modine explaining the whole thing, and then later on, we get to experience it. But they're not telling us anything with the when we're experiencing it, they're not telling us anything new, but we already know what basically happened. So I like the way that they put that together.
I think that just reinforcing even more that this is such a great first episode setting. It's putting all the pieces together.
Yes.
And that allows us then, once they get there, to be in this experience with all the men on this mission and, you know, starting to get real
That's right.
and really piecing things together here.
Correct. And then the shot changes, and we see the men getting all their gear together, and we have Joe Toy goes 3 days supply of carrations, chocolate bars, Charms candies, powder coffee, sugar, matches, compass, bayonet, entrenching tool, ammunition, gas mask, musette bag with ammo, my webbing, my 45, canteen, two cartons of smokes, pocket mines, two grenades, smoke grenades, gamma grenade, TNT, this bullshit, and a pair of nasty skivvies. And then one of the guys next to him looks up and goes, "What's your point?" He goes, "This stuff weighs as much as I do." Then he goes, "I've still got my chute, my reserve chute, my Mae West, and my M1." So again, we could spend probably hours going through every single one of these things, but we are not going to do that. The only thing I'm going to ask you is if you know what a Mae West is.
I did not get that reference.
Okay, a Mae
I
West.
know who Mae West is.
Okay, and you're going to understand now
Yeah.
why it's called a Mae West. A Mae West is actually the life preserver that they all are wearing. Okay, And the during World War II, the Allied air crews called their yellow inflatable vest-like personal flotation devices May West, partly from rhyming slang for breasts, and partly because of the resemblance to her torso. A May West is also a type of round parachute malfunction that contorts the shape of the canopy into the appearance of a large brassiere. So obviously he's referring here to the fact that it just looks like a big yellow brassiere. That's
there you go.
They were referred to as May Wests. Yeah. And then he asked Joe Toy, he says, "Where are you keeping your brass knuckles?" And he goes, "I could have used some brass knuckles." And then, you know, again, first of all, this is an amazing shot because they show us all these guys getting ready to, you know, to put all their stuff together for this jump. And, you know, they have all their equipment and ammos laid out and all that stuff. And then we see a guy maneuvering through the various soldiers, and he screams out, "Sergeant Martin." And he goes, "Hey, Vest, anything for me?" And he goes, "Nope, Sergeant Martin." And, you know, he tries to find Martin, and he gives him something, and then he goes, "Talbert." And then Talbert goes, "Talbert." And he goes, "White, White, here." And, you know, he gives him a box. And, you know, as he's giving Talbert the box, he goes, "Heavy. Are these condoms?" And he goes, "I don't know, probably." And Liebgott turns to him and goes, "What you got?" He goes, "Dear Floyd, give him hell." And he opens up the box. He goes, "It's from the chief of the Kokomo Police Department." And he has a nice, I think it's a 357 Magnum that he sends him. Mm-hmm. And he goes, "Right." He goes, "Whoa, you gotta love cops." which is just amazing that you know that this is something that you know they thought ahead to send him a gun. You know,
it's like, well, you're gonna need this, so.
Well, yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, well, and I really like this section too because, you know, you have all that setup of all these things that they have, and it also reinforces that these men not only are going to be putting themselves in harm's way and trekking across all this land, but it's like they're gonna have a lot of stuff with them, and it just reinforces like how much in shape you really have to be in combat when you're carrying all of this with you on top of yourself, right. And it reinforces like all of that conditioning that they're doing during boot camp, mm-hmm. And because it's like, I can guarantee, like, if you grabbed most people and threw a pack with all that stuff on them and told them, trek a couple miles, that's not going to end well.
No, no. But again, that's the reason why they've also shown us the way that they were conditioned so well by Sobel. I mean, I've mentioned this before. In the book, it mentions the fact that when they got to different levels of training after they finished their boot camp, Easy Company was in better shape than everyone else because of the way that Sobel trained them physically. And, you know, that goes to show. I mean, again, it doesn't matter what company you were in, you had this amount of equipment, but the men from Easy, because they were in such pristine physical shape from everything that they went through here, makes it that it's a little easier for them to have, you know, to have to trek through with this type of stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So at this point, then we see Lipton, played by Donnie Wahlberg, and he's walking through the ranks, and he goes, "All right, listen up, listen up. If you did not sign your GI life insurance policy, you go over and see Sergeant Evans at the headquarters company tent. You boys don't let your families miss out on $10,000. And then he turns to one of the guys and goes, "You hear that, Jerry?" We don't know who Jerry is, but whatever.
Yep.
And then Martin comes over to Lip, and he says, "Hey, Lip." He goes, "Yeah, boy." He goes, "Has Gartner said anything to you about his brother?" He goes, "No." He goes, "Well, I got a problem." He goes, "My wife keeps up with things back home, casualty lists and like that, yeah?" He goes, Garner's brother in Italy? Henry? Yeah, he was killed in Monte Cassino. Well, I'm sure he doesn't know. Damn. What do you think I should do? If it were me, I'd tell him. What do you mean, a couple hours before we jump? He gives a big sigh and goes, I don't know. It's interesting that they bring this dilemma up here. When do you tell someone bad news? Is
Yep.
it something that you wait on? Is it something that, especially when you're about to go into a situation where nobody knows what's going to happen. You don't know if you're going to live or die in this situation. So is it worth, mentioning this or not? So,
It's a tough dilemma, and because at this point they need to be ready to go at any moment to get into action. And you put that type of thing on somebody, but where do you lie in that responsibility of like, and who's to say like you should be able to keep that information from somebody? And I think that kind of moral dilemma is something important to, sprinkle in here because it's something that a lot of these men are dealing with because somebody that they know probably gonna die in this situation. And what do you do in that situation when you need them to be focused and being ready to go to do their mission? So I think it's an interesting thing to be bringing up at this moment, especially on, they're right about the point where they're gonna be going to war, and trying to process that type of information is challenging.
correct. And again, I mean, this is based on a true story. Martin's wife really did send him a letter. It's not as if the writers decided, okay, let's think of something to add in here. That this literally did happen at that time, at least according to the book. You'd think that it's like a very convenient way to create such a dilemma, but apparently it was a real dilemma at the time that Martin needed to figure out what to do. So, and you'd think that the name Garnier is not necessarily something that is so overly common that you would need to be concerned that she might be mixing up the it's not like in Saving Private Ryan where they mix up which Ryan. It's like again, I don't know how prolific the name Garnier is. I haven't gone into that, but my assumption is it's not as prolific as let's say the name Martin. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's everything I have to say about this segment. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
No, I think this is an interesting segment in this transitional part of this first episode where we're leaving that boot camp and training and getting into the point where like this is the moment where things start becoming real because we start to understand this is what they're going to be doing. And I think they do a great job of setting that up in this segment of the episode.
I totally agree. All right. So today's additional segment is Band Brand, where my guests will give their top five movie bands. So I guess fictional movie bands. It could be something that eventually became real, but at the time of the movie, it was fictitious. So Shane, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
So, my number five is the Electric Mayhem from the Muppets. I'm a big fan of the Muppets and, seeing them in like the first The Muppet Movie and through so many other iterations. I think most people know Animal, obviously the drummer of the Electric Mayhem because he's become such a popular character. But, having this like funk band in the along with the Muppets with a bunch of puppets that, look ripped right out of the 60s and 70s is a lot of fun.
Okay, that is great. You're number four.
My number four is Stillwater from the film Almost Famous. And this is such an interesting film because, Cameron Crowe tells a story basically of himself, when he was a young man wanting to be a music journalist. And Billy Crudup and Jason Lee, and they have this very like 70s like classic rock kind of vibe. They feel very Led Zeppelin-y, and I really like the music that they actually came up with for this band. And obviously we get to learn a lot about the band because it's about this kid following them on a tour that they have, for sure.
Okay.
My number three is Sing Street from the movie Sing Street. I love this film. It's really flew under the radar when this came out. This probably came out almost 10 years ago at this point. But
Like
it's a
2016, yeah. It was a
yeah. And 9 years ago.
yeah.
So
Well, 9 years ago is
having
kind
that
of important,
realization.
but yeah.
Yeah, having that realization. It's this group of young Irish kids who, want to start a band in the vein of like Duran Duran and that 80s like new wave type of music. And this is a really heartwarming coming of age story, and I just enjoy the song Drive It Like You Stole It is probably one of the songs that I listen to most out of any movie made song from a band. So that's definitely on my list.
Okay.
My number two is the Blues Brothers band, from the Blues Brothers. I don't even know how many times I've watched this movie. I know technically this started on SNL, but I didn't know who the Blues Brothers were until I watched the movie. And having Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi as Elwood and Joliet Jake. And I love blues music and old soul music and stuff like that. So it's a lot of fun listening to. I had this CD of them performing all these songs. And they're just a fun time. And they're made up of like a bunch of actual musicians along with the two of them. So there's a lot of great talent with them too.
Yeah, well, because they have the SNL thing
And
with them.
yeah, absolutely. And my number one is Spinal Tap. And this is a mix of, I am definitely a big fan of hard rock and heavy metal music, and they're definitely a parody of a lot of bands, but a lot of their songs just basically sound like they could be AC/DC songs, to be perfectly honest. And this is such a fun movie, and they're such a fun group of characters. And this movie's like 84 minutes. I could pop this in any time and get some laughs out of it, and also get a kick out of the music for sure.
Very cool. All right, that is a great list. Thank you very much for that. And every day we play a game called Name That World War II Movie. So I will spin the wheel, and we will randomly get a movie that I'm going to give you some clues to try and guess what the movie is, and you have to see if you know what it is. So let's spin the wheel and see what we get. Around and around and around the wheel goes. What Shane gonna get? Okay, this is a movie from 1957, and it was directed by John Ford, starring John Wayne, and it was all about it was a biography of Navy Flyer Frank Spig Weed. Any idea what movie that is?
I watched this movie sometime last year because I did an 80-week dive through all of John Ford's films. I'm trying to remember what the name of this movie is.
It has the name of a bird in the title.
I'm gonna kick myself so hard because I actually know what this movie is, but I don't remember the title of it. Watched a lot of John Ford movies last year and the year before that.
What do birds and planes have in common?
Wings. It's like Wings of Eagles or something like
Yes, it
that.
is.
That's
Very
probably,
good.
yeah.
Very good. Excellent. The wings of
No,
eagles. The
because
wings of eagles.
I distinctly remember watching this movie, and that's the worst part, trying to remember what the title was. But no, I did literally go through for my YouTube channel and watch all 80 accessible John Ford films, week to week to week to week. There are quite a few World War II movies. throughout there, like Mr. Roberts and We Were Expendable and all a lot of films throughout John Ford's career for sure. Especially a lot with John Wayne in it too. So
Very true. All right, so Shane, would you like to tell people where they can find Shane Kanto?
yes, so the simplest thing is follow me on Instagram, The Wasteland Reviewer, where I shamelessly plug all the things that I do. I have my own website, thewastelandreviewer.blog, where I do written reviews and weekly and monthly articles. My biggest thing is I have my YouTube channel, The Wasteland Reviewer. I review a lot of movies. I have three weekly shows. I do some podcasts on the SPDM Crew Podcasting Network. And, I write for Sif Pop and Knock on One Wood Film, and I'm dabbling into Substack, which is new social media platform. But at the core, I'm a YouTuber, so check out the Wasteland Reviewer YouTube channel.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@moviearound.net. So, until tomorrow, hooray!
Three.